Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
Well, look, we move on. The phrase coercive control, it's become a familiar one in recent years. Just last week on our programme here, Trish Carney described how her swimming coach, George Gibney, manipulated and controlled many aspects of her young life in order to facilitate his abuse. You may also have heard Megan Nolan speaking to Ryan here in Radio 1 during the week, describing the destructive impacts of psychological control and domestic abuse in relationships. Well, these themes figure large in the debut novel by Dublin writer Catherine Talbot. Her new book is entitled A Good Father, and Catherine joins me now from her home in Ballybracken, County Dublin. Hi Catherine, how are you?
Hi Miriam, how are you? So lovely to hear from, to be here this morning. Delighted to be in such great company. I really enjoyed the show so far.
Oh, thanks so much Catherine. Now listen, A Good Father, it's a great read. It's gripping, at times disturbing. It's filled with a kind of psychological suspense, but maybe begin by telling us a little about the story behind the book.
Well, Miriam, at the core of my work is the idea of, you know, how can we hurt the people that we love the most in this world? The inspiration sort of, I remember one day walking my kids to school early in the morning when they were quite young, and it was a beautiful morning, and I remember distinctly, it was just a really clear, crisp morning. Went for a coffee with my friend out in Greystones, and when I came back, I heard about a case in the news, and it just sort of struck me, how can things like this happen when we're just going along in our, you know, our daily lives?
And it's not giving anything away, Catherine, to say that Des, look, he's the controlling force in this story. And it's interesting, you tell the story from his, the abuser's perspective. Tell me how his character came to you.
His character, I stumbled across his character, and he was so strong to me. I just found that the only way to sort of get him out of my system was to write him, as he revealed himself to me.
Interesting. And it's not an easy choice, is it, Catherine, to make the voice that tells the story of the baddie of the piece, especially, I suppose, given the themes of control and abuse?
No, it's not easy, but I think that I'm trying to illuminate the fact that, you know, a lot of these situations, the victim is rendered voiceless.
Yeah, and how challenging is it, I suppose, to also, Catherine, write from a different gender perspective, considering it's essentially a story here of male on female abuse?
I find, Miriam, when I'm writing, that for some reason all the characters I write that seem to be, you know, work the best for me, they seem to be male. So it's kind of like, it's not a conscious choice in the way I approach my work. It's just that I feel that I'm a little bit more distant from it, and I'm just able to get more into the psyche of the male character, if you like.
Yeah, and although Des, like, he wants to control his family, his primary focus is his wife, Jen. And interestingly, although we see her through his eyes, she doesn't really have a voice. Was that intentional?
That was intentional. That is deliberate. By telling the story completely through his eyes, it's kind of illuminating the fact that a lot of these victims of domestic violence, typically female, are essentially voiceless.
And you wrote this, you know, at a time when the problem of coercive control, we've been discussing it a lot on prime time, it was becoming more high profile, wasn't it? New laws were being passed.
Well, it's interesting because when I finished the novel, we went to proof in 2018, it was at that stage I wasn't terribly familiar with the actual term coercive control. It was only when I finished the novel, that actual term had started to come, you know, into the media. And at that point, I met my local TD, Jennifer Carroll McNeil, who had a clean-up here in Ballybrack Village, and I knew she was working a little bit in the area. So she agreed to read the book, and she gave me some great feedback and advice.
And tell us, you know, for people listening this morning, how does Des, the good father in this story, exert his control over his wife and family? I mean, does he do things that many people might not realise is actually abusive or manipulative?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's small details in the book. You know, he's controlling who she meets. He's kind of controlling her, you know, small things like what they'll watch on TV. He's controlling what's going on in the kitchen. He's controlling, you know, the food. It's all kind of little small things And they're kind of, everything is kind of subtle. There's a lot, you know, everything is quite nuanced and subtle in the novel.
It's not
graphic, you know, violence or anything like that. It's more subtle.
How did you go about writing that? I mean, there are a lot of people listening this morning, Catherine, who want to write their debut novel. I mean, first of all, did you have to do research or did you just imagine how he'd do those little moments of control? How did you go about writing it and deciding how Des would behave?
Again, it's kind of going back to your question earlier on. He was such a strong sort of, you know, character that everything, you know, it's deliberately told. As I said before, you know, everything is told through his eyes. So it's kind of like his world. Everything seemed to make sense to him, and it just kind of seemed to go on and on and on. And as it revealed, it everything just seemed to make sense to him in his world because it was so insular, if you like.
How long did it take for this book to happen, Catherine? When did you decide, A, I want to write a book, and how did you go about doing it, and where did you get the courage to write it?
Well, I was working in the arts and cultural industry in my 20s, and, you know, at that stage, Dublin was a really, it's this kind of pre-Celtic Tiger era. It was just really dynamic, exciting, you know, scene. There was lots going on, opportunities, loads of kind of, you know, art gallery openings, theatre. I was doing that during the day, and by night I was studying in a degree in English and philosophy in UCD. And then later on in my 30s, you know, I got married. I have two children now, and as the kids started to grow up, I started to, you know, seriously think about writing. And at that point, I started to get a little bit of short fiction published in Banshee, which is a very good literary magazine that's really good for emerging writers in this country, and also No Alibis Press. And then, you know, when the kids got a little bit older, I was able to carve out a bit of space. So I went to Trinity to do a master's in creative writing. And, you know, after graduation, by around 2018, I had, you know, the first draft of the book, which I sent into Penguin, and they really liked it. So it was due to be published in 2020, but, you know, with the whole pandemic, it was pushed back.
So, because it's such a good book, for people listening, Catherine, who maybe feel deflated, have tried to write their first novel, but maybe, like, you were lucky with Penguin, obviously it was a great book, but other great books have been rejected initially. Give them advice. Would you tell them to keep going?
Oh, absolutely, Miriam. You've got to keep going. You've got to just... I find routine is brilliant. I've been swimming in the sea every day for the last 10 years. So what I do every morning is I just go straight down for a swim and just kind of settles you down. And you have to work very hard, but it's just kind of to keep going and to hold your nerve, you know, and really believe in your work. Because, you know, if it's good enough, it will get out there.
Absolutely. Well, Catherine, it's been really lovely speaking to you this morning. Your book is called A Good Father. It's your debut novel from Catherine Talbot, and it's published by Penguin. Thanks so much.